Hello and welcome to the Monday Mile podcast, the podcast where we quite literally invite you to join us for a stroll as we walk a mile. Today's guest is quite the wellness sensation, a figurehead of knowledge when it comes to health. She's an author, not just your average YouTuber. She's a yogi and a lady leading the charge in the fitness arena. Have you ever heard of the Virtue Method? Because I have. Shona Virtue. We're in Australia. Welcome to the Monday Mile podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Yes, we are. Sunny Sydney, in fact.
How surreal that we are here on Bondi Beach and re-meeting. I think we met for the first time, I reckon it was about 5 or 6 years ago, because you quite like your snowboarding, don't you?
I do. I haven't gone in so long, and it actually makes me a little bit nervous telling you that I like it, because if we ever happen to be on the snowfields, my dream, by the way, one day together, I don't want to eat my words. Do you know what I'm saying? I need to be kind of cool about how I deliver my level, my ability. So yes, I love snowboarding. Yes, I think I can hold my own, but I'm nowhere, not even scratching the surface of where you're at.
So I feel like I know Australia semi well, because actually snowboarding took me to Sydney, and then we would drive the car up to Canberra, and then we'll not tell anyone. But on our days off, we used to skive, drive down and have a couple of days in Sydney. Have you ever snowboarded in the snowy mountains?
I love that you call them the snowy mountains. It really doesn't feel that mountainous. It feels like a hill when you compare it to anywhere in Europe or the States. But yes, I absolutely have. Of course, that's where I learned. My dad was an avid skier and put me on skis at like 11 months old. And so I could walk at 10, I think he said. And then he'd like immediately put me on skis. And so I started learning how to ski. And then when I was like 12, I really wanted to be like a cool snowboarder. And so I then was like, I'm going to make the switch. And I persevered, because it's very humbling if you go from like being very good at skiing or anything, right? Go from being very good at one thing in the same environment to then switch sports and be like terrible at it. It's so mortifying. So I was in Austria with my parents actually, and they were like, are you sure you don't want to ski? And I'm like, I need to just like, I don't know anyone here. I don't need to feel cool. I'm just going to like double down and figure out and get through this learning curve. And that was when I pushed through learning how to snowboard, and it paid off.
It's funny because it's quite surreal, because people don't associate Australia with snowboarding. They generally think of surfing. And here we are on this beautiful beach. Do you surf as well?
Yes, I can. Again, another one where I'm like always reluctant. I think it's because like you feel you want to be humble with your words when you're in an environment where there are people that are very, very, very good at it. So yes, I can, again, hold my own on a surfboard, but there are people that I know. And so my relative awareness of like how good those people are makes me go, I'm terrible, but I can surf.
So you're Australian. We met in London. Mm-hmm. How is it being back home, and are you here to stay?
Oh, good question. I don't even know the answer to that, to be honest. I think we've spoken about this many times before. I feel like I'm just always going to be sort of in love with Australia and UK at the same time. I sort of feel like I'm in a relationship with two people, if that makes sense. It's sort of like when I'm with one, I miss the other. When I'm in one, I miss the other. I try to be present and love the country that I'm in for what it has to offer. So when I'm in Australia, I definitely love, love, love the environment, the nature, the kind of lifestyle choices. And then when I'm in the UK, I love the people. I love the culture. I love the kind of like, I know this is going to sound like a dig, but I love the griminess of it. I love that we can all kind of like get down, and there's a sense of camaraderie in winter. I mean, there really is. And so when I'm in Australia, I enjoy the sunshine. I enjoy the smiles on people's faces from all of that. But I have to say, there's just something like London really has my heart. The UK really has my heart in that way.
Life in the UK really is very, very different to Australia.
So different.
I mean, like, a normal morning in Australia is like super early mornings, getting a workout in. How have your days changed and your routine changed since being back in Australia?
Do you know what? I don't think it's changed that much because when I'm in the UK, I probably live like an Australian. I'm just much more grumpy about it. That makes sense, because I'm like waking up still at the same time, still trying to exercise in the morning, still trying to do all those sorts of things. It just might not necessarily be as quote unquote easy as it feels here. At least, especially not in Sydney. Like, Sydney is definitely a capital of like wellness and fitness and that kind of like fitness vibe, in a different way to somewhere like Melbourne, which I think you've been to, which is that sort of like, it has more of a London type feel. So there's still loads and loads of fitness and wellness everywhere. It's just the way in which you go about it is a bit different.
Yeah, I found with Melbourne, it was very food centric. Like, everything was based around the food. And I kind of guess in London, it's similar. Like, I feel like people 100%. Train a lot, obviously for lifestyle, but also to go out and enjoy, you know, a good meal. Everything is centered and based around food, I think, in these like intense cities, because it's kind of the only outlet, because you don't have surfing or snowboarding on your doorstep.
It's a very creative outlet. And so I think that's the beautiful part of it. Like, it makes for interesting people and interesting culture. Whereas like, somewhere like Sydney, maybe even LA, it's like the culture is the fitness. The culture is the wellness. So it's like, people will look at you funny if you're like, oh, you know, what do you, it's, you know, do you want to grab a bite to eat at 8 o'clock? People are like, sorry, 8 p.m. I will have done my ice bath, my infrared sauna, and gone to bed by 8 p.m. Thank you very much. And not turned on any lights, because I don't want to impact my circadian rhythms. So like, that's the whole Sydney vibe. Do you know what I mean? And that completely clashes with how it would be in. People have their breakfast at 8 p.m. in London.
I'm on that vibe. I've really, really enjoyed being here and kind of hopping on that train. But also, I'm cool to get off it. I think it's the balance of kind of being able to do a bit of both. And then finding that is the tricky part. That's where I want to delve into your business, because it's been incredibly successful. Where did it start?
Ooh. Another good question. So where did it start? I mean, I could say that it started from, you know, when I was very young and my parents enrolled me into a program at gymnastics called Jumping Jelly Babies. And I was about 3 or 4 years old. And then I moved from that program into the Elite Gymnastics Training Program, and then was, you know, training 30 hours a week. That is probably what started the journey for me into fitness and movement, and just completely embracing and living health and fitness as well as sports performance. I essentially took that into my career, even though I didn't necessarily want to. I actually wanted to start out as a psychologist. And so when I was about like 7 years old, I thought, oh, I'm going to be a psychologist. This is what I really want to do. I want to work with children. I was really young and I had that realization. Anyway, gymnastics took over. Health and fitness and wellness took over my life for obvious reasons. And it made me then choose this as a career path. Now, funnily enough, I have come back to psychology. And so I'm just finishing up a psych degree, because I've found that the two integrate really, really well together. Something I always forget to mention is that I actually did have a stint in my life where I went and worked in an office, and I worked for probably about like 4 or 5 years in an office. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I wasn't sure. I was sort of coming off the back of gymnastics, coming off the back of dance. And I was like, I need money. I can't just do dance and gymnastics. Interestingly, I went in to work in an office 9 to 5 hours, sometimes, you know, obviously 8 to 6, whatever it is. And I realized the lifestyle of sitting at a desk all day, of kind of like reaching for whatever food you can grab, of not living that super active life and instead becoming more sedentary. And it started to really impact my body in a negative way. So all the strength I'd built with gymnastics, all the strength that I'd built in dance, the fitness, it started to disappear. I didn't have the same consistency, and it really started to wreak havoc on my body. I then became a yoga teacher because I was like, I think I need to work in a more active job. And interestingly, I draw on all of that experience in the office and in that lifestyle, in that working lifestyle, now in my work, because it gives me the passion to really make sure that people find and fall in love with physical activity, because I know how detrimental it can be on the body. And at the same time, I understand that it's not that easy to just devote hours and hours and hours of the Sydney life to your health and wellness, right? Regime, or for most people, fitness and physical activity has to be an afterthought because work probably dominates so much of their hours. And so I fully understand that and know, like, it can be so frustrating when you see people with health and fitness businesses that are like, come on, it's easy, just get on with it and do this. And meanwhile, those people have like hours and hours and hours in their day and life to dedicate to health and fitness, like I used to when I was a gymnast, like I used to when I was a dancer. It's sort of an interesting journey where I sort of went from like being really full-time, really intense, which was a really important part of my life and my educational journey, and then went to working in an office and then being like, oh, now I get to live the lifestyle that I want to help people get out of, if that makes sense.
It's so incredible how you can draw so much from all of the different pillars of your life. And I can really connect to that now. And it's only now looking back at my snowboarding, and there's so many things I learned from within that. And especially with your business, working in an office, and people just see like the shine and the jazz and, you know, the sort of semi-polished content, which also is incredibly raw, but it's not just done. There's hours and hours and hours of work that goes into things. And it's almost the art of that is making it look easy. And you do that incredibly, incredibly well. How would you describe your success?
When it comes to your success,
yes,
how would you personally describe it?
Ooh. As in, what's my metric for success? Or how would I describe my current
your business,
success?
Your career. Ooh. It's definitely one that does not emulate the norm, however times are changing.
Yep.
CEO.
CEO, yes. Look, I think it's ever evolving. And I do think that, success is so hard to define for me because it's, I feel like it has to be kind of a holistic approach. Like I have to be like, if I am really, really successful in business, like let's say it's just the metric is financial,
yeah,
but I feel unhappy or I feel sad in other areas, it really doesn't matter. And I've had times in my life where I've been like, business is booming, but I am more unhappy than I've ever been in my life. And so when that happens, it doesn't matter how successful you are in that one area, you just can't really enjoy it. You can't really savor it. So I think that success has to be very much a holistic kind of job. And so therefore, I try to really make sure that I'm successful in all areas. So it's like, okay, how are my relationships doing? When I moved to the UK, I really had to figure out like, well, what's my inner reason for training if it's, you know, not to be half naked on Bondi Beach and dealing with clients who didn't want to be half naked on Bondi Beach as well.
I guess that attributes massively to your success because...
Yeah, for sure.
That is what people latch onto. What is my motivation? You've been a huge, huge part of that for hundreds of thousands and, in fact, maybe millions of people.
Oh, I thought you were going to say hundreds of thousands of years. I was like, Jesus.
Jesus.
Having a baby's aged me.
Straight to the point.
Yeah.
Holding absolutely nothing back on this one.
Yes, I am 100,000-year-old influencer, fitness influencer, fitness professional. Yes. So basically, it really made me ask those questions because I think that, not all of us are motivated for those aesthetic reasons. It's definitely how it's marketed to us, right? How fitness is constantly talked to us about is like get beach body ready. I mean, these things will probably always be a thing, but when I moved to the UK, it was sort of like not as motivated. I could see it in the culture, I could see it in myself. It was not a motivating reason enough to get me out on those cold mornings when I'm covered in a, you know, puffer and track pants anyway. So I was like, okay, well, what's the reason? And then I then started to tap into, you know, all my gymnastic stuff and how empowered I felt when I was a gymnast, being able to do certain things, push-ups, pull-ups, you know, squats, all different kinds. And obviously, when you're a gymnast, you're doing all kinds of different tricks. But it was like that made me feel something very different to how it made me feel to just simply be losing weight or just simply be getting in quote-unquote shape.
So having a goal and walking towards a physical target.
A skill-based goal, exactly. Yeah, it was just sort of like kept me there longer. There's an analogy that I often use where it's like, I think that there's nothing wrong with having aesthetic goals. There's nothing wrong with you wanting to, you know, whatever, get in shape for a certain visual reason. But those things tend to be more like kindling. If you think of fitness motivation or exercise motivation as like a fire, you can light the fire with a little bit of kindling, a little bit of like, yeah, I want to get a bit more shredded. Yeah. The log that's going to sustain that fire for a long period of time is going to be more like your kind of longer term goals. It's going to be like, yeah, I want to be able to squat my body weight, or I want to be able to run around with my kids or run a marathon. Those sorts of things keep us kind of like engaged for longer.
When your body's a bit broken and you're a bit knackered, how do you find the motivation to keep training when the weather in the UK is so shocking?
Okay. I think you have to really get to know yourself. So it does depend on who you are and how you feel personally motivated. It's one of the reasons that I got into psychology, because you have to understand yourself and your own behavioral patterns to really be able to make the right choice when it comes to this. But there is something in psychology called behavioral activation. And it's a really big theory, but just to kind of summarize it, essentially what it says and talks about and discusses, and it's used a lot in treating depression, is that sometimes you just have to engage in the behavior in order to feel better. Whereas a lot of people are trying to feel better in order to then engage in a behavior. And this whole behavioral activation theory, which is, by the way, like has so much robust evidence in support of it, basically says that engage in the thing. So don't wait for the motivation. Don't wait to feel like you should do some stretching. Don't wait to feel like you should go outside for a walk. Just honor the values that you have inside you. If exercise is one of them, then just do it.
There's a huge element of discipline when it comes to showing up. And I guess in short, that's what you're saying. If you put it in the diary, rock up, get it done.
Yeah, because that's the stuff that makes you feel better.
When it comes to your own personal routine,
yep,
with business,
yep,
with having a new baby,
yeah,
how do you balance that routine? What is the virtue secret?
Okay, I'm going to say right now, balance is a lie. I think balance is a lie. So I didn't want to give the impression.
Oh, that's controversial. I like it.
It is controversial, but balance is a lie. I think that there's natural ebbs and flows in life that we're all sort of trying to manage. And so actually it's about tuning in every day to be mindful enough to kind of say, what fulfills me? What lights me up today?
Yeah.
And then over the course of, hopefully months and a few weeks, you actually feel like more nourished by tuning in. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
So I think that, but the reason I say balance is a lie is that our lives they have so much variance, right? Something can just like drop in your plate and completely shake up what you thought was right about the world, about your life. I think if we're clinging to this idea of balance, like I must meditate for 20 minutes in the morning and I must do this. Definitely there's non-negotiables about your day that I think help keep routine and keep us grounded. But I think you have to be adaptable in some way, shape or form. And so that's why I think actually it's about tuning in. Actually it's about acknowledging what is necessary now in the moment based on the situation that you're in. I guess you would say it's a bit more of a stoic approach, because it's kind of like control the things you can but be adaptable with the things that you can't change.
I'm all for that. I love a routine, and for me,
yes,
I love to start my day with some form of movement.
Yep.
But if I was to commit to, let's say, a 10k run,
mm-hmm,
every single day,
mm-hmm,
for me that instantly would pull the balance.
Got
because
it.
Because then I'm not actually listening to how I'm feeling.
To how you're feeling, yeah, totally.
And then I'd be fully broken.
Yeah.
Because
yep,
I can probably only do that two times a week,
yes,
before my calves blow up. That's the reality.
It's true.
So it's finding balance by listening to your body. I really like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
When it comes to sleep, that's something in the Western world with high-powered jobs and places to be,
yep,
that we struggle with. Throughout your, yeah, approach,
and
the pillars.
Yeah.
The pillars that we live by.
Yeah.
How have you managed your own relationship with sleep and the importance in that? Because I think sleep hygiene is a very interesting topic.
Well, I'm very glad that you've asked.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have to say, I look back on a lot of the content I've created around sleep in the past and I cringe. And the reason I cringe is because it's all well and good to be encouraging people without kids to get their 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Like, absolutely. That's definitely, like, if you don't have kids.
Is that a non-negotiable?
I think if you don't have kids and you're not a shift worker, you're not dealing with insomnia or, you know, anxiety or something like that, then yeah, really, like, how hard could it be?
Yeah.
Just fucking go to bed a bit earlier. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stop. Can I swear on this podcast?
Of course you can.
Okay, great.
Stop with the drama. Just get in bed.
Just get in bed. Just get off your phone. You're going to feel amazing. You're going to wake up. You're going to feel better. Like, it's just
simple.
Simple.
It's quite easy.
For anyone else, you're dealing with anxiety. If you are dealing with something that's keeping you up, be it children, be it a job, night shift, all that sort of stuff, I cringe at some of my posts that were like very black and white. Like, you've got to sleep. That's it. Get it done or you're going to die. Your question about sleep hygiene, I have to be honest with you, I never paid that much attention to it. I mean, a little bit, I was like, yeah, no phones, that kind of thing. But actually, since having a little baby, I've realized how important sleep hygiene is for her, because she's very sensitive to bright lights coming in, to obviously, she's not doing it on screens, but you really see the impact of what it can do to a circadian rhythm. Now, babies don't have very strong circadian rhythms, but you're trying to establish them. So you notice the importance of light, dark, those sorts of things. So really, some of the most important things for me to be able to get any kind of sleep, and for her, is actually, you know, lowering the lights, making sure we're not doing bright lights at night, making sure that we're not eating too close to bed. So I actually don't do a feed right before she sleeps.
No way.
I'll try to keep her upright for a while.
How do you manage that when she's like, mommy, I want boob?
To be honest, as long as I give her the boob, like probably like 30, 40, sometimes even 50 minutes before she goes down, I just keep her upright close to me. She still goes to sleep, and she'll sleep, you know, for quite a long time.
So would you say your own relationship with sleep hygiene has changed?
Yes, because even though I may not be getting sleep that's, you know, straight from like, for 7 to 9 hours or something, I'm still really making sure that if I feel calm, I can still fall asleep very quickly and then wake up and then fall asleep again. Does that make sense? It's like, if I'm not sticking to those things around screen time, around food, around lighting, then that's going to impact my ability to fall asleep. Like, I see all the baby influencers, the ones that are sort of showing their newborn life. Yeah. And often they'll do these videos where they're showing like, okay, I woke up at 1 a.m. and then I woke up at 3 a.m. But they've got this massive ring light in their eyes, or they've got the lights on. And I think to myself, that's not good, not just for the influencer, but then anyone watching them who is learning from these.
It's almost counterintuitive, right?
Well, it's very counterintuitive if you know about the way that light can impact your circadian rhythm. So you don't want to be turning on the lights in the middle of a feed. If you can avoid it, you want to keep those lights down low, maybe some red light, something like that. And that's not a super expensive option or switch. In fact, if anything, it'll save you on power. So it's a double whammy, guys. It's
Especially in the UK with the current financial crisis when it comes to our electricity bills.
Yes.
Definitely not the one. What's your routine like day to day?
So, this is another one I cringe at when I look back on things that I have said and been able to do. I mean, I don't cringe. If you have the time, it's beautiful to be able to spend your morning, you know, thinking about, taking a long time to think about hydration and meditation and journaling and all these different beautiful things. So I do still think if you have the time, commit it to those things and have a beautiful, mindful morning. That is not a luxury that I really have as much anymore. So now it's still trying to adhere to mindfulness-based practices, but probably has to be while I'm breastfeeding. So I now meditate while I'm breastfeeding. My walk is accompanied with, you know, Bubba in a pram, things like that. But I think that in terms of a routine, you are somewhat at the mercy to this little one who hasn't quite found a routine yet herself.
And then it's being fluid, right?
And it's being fluid. I loved that morning routine movement that came in, because I do think that habits obviously dictate, you know, there's all these sayings around like, own your morning, own your life. And I do think that there's definitely truth to that, but we can't just talk in absolutes all the time. And so where is there room for us to actually be the way that humans have been for thousands of years and thrived? This is like one of our biggest skills, is the fact that we actually are highly adaptable. And so we don't want to lose that adaptability. Routine is important, definitely, and necessary, and sometimes like completely necessary, but around that we have to have the ability to be fluid. If you can't journal in the morning or you can't meditate, does that completely ruin your entire day?
Exactly.
And
I think that's the biggest factor.
Yeah.
When it comes to people setting out these pillars of structure, if you're then for some reason unable to commit to one of those, you shouldn't allow it to
completely ruin
your day.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's like the balance in not letting it consume you, I think, is the important factor.
Yes.
And if you can have a few pillars that you can work towards and you tick them off, boom.
Amazing.
You're absolutely winning.
Shona, we ask all of our guests on the Monday Mile podcast.
Tell me.
What their relationship is like with Monday, the start of the week. Do you feel a Monday? Do you get the Sunday night ick? Or are you all for it?
I'm going to be very honest with you. I love Mondays.
We love that. Yeah. We love that on this podcast.
Mondays feel like a mini New Year's Day for me. Yeah. Like a sort of New Year's resolution in a week.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So yeah. Kind of Mondays make me feel really good. It's sort of Fridays that I struggle with more because I'm like, all right, weekend's coming. Did I achieve everything I wanted to achieve? And I sort of have this little internal battle with myself about those things. I think Mondays for me are that like fresh start, like time to get on with it.
For those people that might be struggling with their Monday morning.
Yes.
That are finding it hard to get up, to be inspired, to be motivated.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips or advice that you could share with our listeners?
Yes. So I'm really big on two things, cognitive behavioral therapy and another therapy called behavioral activation. Now, both of these are really, really effective in working with depression, anxiety. You don't have to have depression or have been diagnosed with depression or been diagnosed with anxiety to benefit from these things. One of the things that you do within these two things is really, there's two things actually. When CBT, you start to unpack basically your reasons behind certain things. So you'll do some Socratic questioning where you just ask yourself, like, what is it about Monday that I truly dislike? And you don't have any judgment for the answer, but just sit down with yourself and ask and just start writing or typing or even vocalize it if you don't like to do those things. The other thing that is really valuable is in behavioral activation, which is what's called a values inventory. You write down a bunch of your values and you try to determine, okay, is my behavior in alignment with some of my true values? And so when you do those two things together, you can start to get to know yourself a little bit better. And it helps you to uncover, maybe there are some things I'm doing on my Monday that don't align with my values. So of course you can have a shit Monday. So it just helps you to get to know yourself better.
Strong.
So that you can then say, what should I start to introduce? And maybe it is going to be that you're going to introduce some physical activity because you realize, well, is in alignment with, you know, who I am and who I want to be. It just motivates you in a totally different way.
And how it makes you feel as
well.
Yeah. Intrinsic.
Yes.
Get the pen and paper out and start writing.
Do it. I'm here for it.
And lastly, Shona, are there any life mottos or quotes that you live by that you can share with our listeners on this very hot Tuesday morning on Bondi Beach? In fact, it's so hot that we've actually had to stop and we are now static whilst the cameraman stands in the shade. For perspective to those of you who are listening to the audio only.
Yes, and it's not the cameraman, to be fair, it's the camera that's too hot.
Yes.
He's fine. Yes, so actually something that's really, really helped me throughout my entire life is that the obstacle is the way.
Okay.
It's a Stoic quote, and it basically is looking at the fact that it's not just trying to like knuckle down and grit through the obstacle itself, but acknowledging that the obstacle can be the thing that provides you with the gift of the next skill that you need to get through it. Like sometimes another one is the only way is through. Like you just have to do it in order to gain the skill that you need to handle that stuff, to build the resilience. So if anyone is out there going through something right now that's really, really heavy, really intense, just remember that the obstacle is the way, that the depth of this pain, there is the potential for some kind of transformation and some gift of wisdom that you'll take into parts of your life. So I think that's been my underlying one for life.
Shona Virtue, so much strength in your knowledge. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. If you are new to the podcast, please do make sure to subscribe on all of your favorite audio platforms. And we are now on YouTube, which is very exciting. You are a YouTuber. What do YouTubers normally say to their fans, their followers and subscribers?
Hit the like button, hit
that's
the subscribe
the
button.
Yeah, all of those things. I really, really hope you've enjoyed this Monday Mile podcast all the way from sunny Sydney in Australia. Thank you so much for joining us, Shona Virtue. It's been an absolute
thank you for having
honor.
Me.
What's next? Where to now?
Pick up the baby.
Yes!